Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 97. I'm recording it on Wednesday, February 18th, 2009. The PE10 level today is 14. That's fair value. Stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. The music for the podcast is by Kevin McLeod at the Incompetech.com website. The title of this selection is Heavy Interlude. I had, in the last podcast, I had said that the selection was named Heavy Interlude, and that was wrong. I think that one was called Not Quite Tops of the Pops, so I had that one wrong. The title of the podcast is It's Not William Bernstein versus Rob Bennett. It's William Bernstein versus William Bernstein. The idea for this podcast started with a note that John Walter Russell put to his the notes section at his website. John Walter Russell's, he's my partner in the development of the calculators at my website and at his website. John's website is early-retirement-planning-insights.com. And John is the main researcher in the Retire Early and Indexing discussion board communities on safe withdrawal rates and other questions that where he looks at the historical stock return data and helps people learn what works and what doesn't work in stock investing. And John has a wonderful website where he presents all of his research free, no charge. And he's done 7 years of research now, which is presented at that website. And John put up a note. He has a notes section where he reports on current developments. And he put up a note entitled, this was just a couple days ago. And the note is, it's short, so I'll read it. And the podcast is a response to that note. And the note says, Hocus was right. That's the title. My screen name is Hocus. He says, Rob Bennett was right. The conventional studies got the safe withdrawal rate number wrong. Millions are facing busted retirements. They trusted the experts. The experts were wrong. Rob Bennett has faced ruthless attack after attack because of his insights. He has been banned from discussion board after discussion board because of abusive posters who have followed his every move in order to shut him up. Rob Bennett's sin is that he insists on honest posting about safe withdrawal rates. It began when he asked a simple question that I was able to answer later. What is the price-adjusted safe withdrawal rate? Rob Bennett's investment advice is much more accurate than that of John Bogle and William Bernstein. Rob Bennett varies allocations with risk levels. He invests rationally. He does not invest passively. Well, I wanted to respond because I think that's, you know, it involves me personally. And in that sense, it's a little hard to comment on. I'm obviously grateful to John for saying those words. And I think those words are accurate words. They are words that need to be said. People need to know who is giving good investing advice and who is not giving good investing advice. And I certainly think it is true that the valuation-informed indexing is a much better approach than the conventional approach to indexing, which is advocated by Bill Bernstein and John Bogle. And I certainly think that rational investing is far superior to passive investing, which is advocated by Bill Bernstein and John Bogle. And it's important that that be said, because unless people say it, we're not going to be able to persuade people to switch to the valuation-informed strategy or the rational investing model. So I applaud John for those comments, and I'm grateful to him for those comments. But I want to do a podcast putting those comments in perspective. Going a little deeper on, you know, just what it means that the investing advice put forward by Rob Bennett, a Hobbit reporter. I am a Hobbit. you know, that's been given this job of taking the one ring that binds us all and, you know, taking it to Mount Doom, throwing it into the fiery pit where it is melted down, and we will no longer be slaves to passive investing. And I'm a reporter. That's really my, you know, that's my background. I'm a journalist. That's what I've done all my life for a living. And that's really what I am. I'm not an investing expert like John Bogle or Bill Bernstein or any of the others. So it's true, I think, that the investing ideas I have put forward are superior ideas. But I don't want to say differ. I don't differ with John, but to add a bit of a caveat to what John says, I would say that I'm not sure that I even offer investing advice. There's a sense in which I do. People say, you know, if somebody writes me an email and says, you know, Rob, what should I do? I might write an email back, and I might take that email and feature it at my blog, and so others can read about it. In that sense, I suppose it's investing advice, but I don't have any background that would permit me to offer investing advice that anyone else who knows how to read and write and use the internet would not be able to offer. In other words, all I've ever done is, you know, I tried to put together my own plan for early retirement. And when I did that, I had to do a little bit of research. I had to look, you know, research things in magazines. This was the days before the internet. Magazines and, you know, books and things of that nature. And then since then, the internet. And, you know, that's really all I've ever done. So I've never managed a big mutual fund. I've never took courses in investing. You know, when I was in college, I took courses in accounting and economics, things of that nature, but never directly on investing. So, you know, I think it's a little bit, it's a strange situation. It's, you know, I don't think of myself as an investing expert, and I don't want you to think of me as an investing expert. But I do think it's true that the investing ideas explored at PassionSaving.com and, of course, at John's site. John, you know, is being humble in those comments. He's saying that Rob Bennett's ideas are superior to the ideas of John Bogle and Bill Bernstein. But, of course, John Walter Russell's ideas are superior to the ideas of John Bogle and William Bernstein. And I don't know who's more responsible for the ideas of valuation-informed indexing and rational investing, whether it's John or myself. You know, I don't think they were possible without the input from both of us. I sort of got the ball rolling by asking the question, and John did the research that showed that, you know, my intuition was on the mark, and hundreds of other community members came forward and offered constructive comments, and that provoked new questions on my part, and that provoked new research on John's part, and it's all a circle. It all just feeds on itself. So I don't think you can say that these ideas are, you know, came out of Rob Bennett's head. They sure didn't come out of my head by me sitting in a room somewhere thinking grand thoughts. They came out of my head and, you know, as the result of discussions I've had with hundreds of fellow community members, and as a result of enormous amounts of effort and intelligence on the, you know, on John's part. And importantly, this is really the point here, and input from guess who? John Bogle and William Bernstein. John Bogle, take a bow. Bill Bernstein, take a bow. You guys invented a new approach to investing. You came up with a new model of how to invest successfully for the long run, and you don't even know it. You don't even know you did it, but you did. Think of folk music. Bob Dylan gets hit for this all the time, and I don't know if it's properly so or not. I sort of go back and forth, but Bob Dylan came out of the folk tradition. And a lot of his songs, there was one that it sort of shocked me at the time. Dylan has a song called She Belongs to Me. And it doesn't get as much attention nowadays, but there was a time when it was considered a pretty big song for him. And I think it's on his Greatest Hits Volume 2. So that was considered an important song. I became interested in Dylan, I don't know, I think when I was in high school. And at one point, I was down at a bookstore, and I saw a book called, I don't recall the title. I'll get it wrong if I guess. But the title that comes to my head is Folk Blues, but I could be totally wrong. But it was somebody who collected, I was either trying to learn how to play the guitar or the harmonica at the time. I think it was the harmonica I was trying to learn how to play. And this guy had a collection of old folk songs. And Dylan used to eat that stuff up. He used to, you know, listen to these records of old folk songs. And I'm looking through that book, and I don't think it had the same title. I don't think the title was She Belongs to Me. But there was a song in there, and you read the... you read the lyrics, and it was She Belongs to Me. I mean, I can't tell you exactly, but some of the lyrics were almost identical. You know, he's got the lyric about, for Christmas, get her this, and for her birthday, get her a drum, you know, and it came right out of this earlier song. And I was just, amazed by that. It was like, wait a minute, did Dylan write this song? And He's been charged with that crime many, many times since then. I discovered that on my own, but if you go to his most recent album, Modern Times, people now on the internet, they'll write about, well, this song is just a version of this earlier one, and almost all of them have their roots in some earlier folk song. I think that was even true in his religious period. I remember Gotta Serve Somebody was his big religious song, and people went back, and that came from some song by Woody Guthrie or something. You know, and he changes the title. It's not exactly the same, but the idea is. Well, the point here is you can look at it two ways. Some say it's unfair that he's sort of, stealing. You know, it's plagiarizing. He's taking these earlier songs and claiming them as his own. Some of them are in the public domain. I think they have to be in the public domain. If they weren't, he couldn't do it. But they're in the public domain, so he's allowed to take them. But he then says, by Bob Dylan. He doesn't say arrangement by Bob Dylan. He suggests that he wrote the song. But, it's arguable because in the folk tradition, they weren't all hung up on copyright, in the days when the old folk songs were being written. People would literally, take a guitar and go someplace and play a song. And then the people who heard it would go back that night and they'd practice it. They'd say, I want to make it sound like that. And they'd copy the song, but they'd change it for whatever people were interested in their locality. They'd change the names of the characters and they'd change the events. And instead of, it being a barroom brawl, it would turn into a war, and, instead of a blonde-haired woman, it was a red-haired woman. They'd change it around. They'd put in jokes. If they were a person that liked jokes, they'd put in jokes. And then maybe the version with the jokes would get more popular. And you'd hear two versions of the song, 50 years later. And they'd be very different songs with different morals and different messages. And it was unclear whether it was the same song anymore. And that was the folk tradition. And the impression you get is that Dylan is a big believer in the folk tradition. So what he really does is take a lot of folk songs and change them around to fit the modern world and to fit his own ideas of life. And so he's not copying them, line for line. But he clearly is inspired by these earlier songs. And the impression you get is he doesn't think that's a bad thing. He thinks that's just fine. So he's not really necessarily even claiming to have written the songs from scratch. He's claiming to be part of a folk tradition, and he picks them up, and whether he should give more credit or not. There are some cases where it seems like he should give more credit than he does. So I do have some criticism on that score. But on the other hand, the idea, what he's doing, I think is, in general, I think is very legitimate. That, you know, you could argue there is nothing new under the sun. You know, all the great songs were written 1,000 years ago, and all we're doing is creating variations on the form, and, you know, all the great novels have been written, but we're creating variations on the form. Well, I think that's true in investing. You know, something I have said, I contrast passive investing with rational investing. Passive investing is the model that dominates. It has dominated, at least up to the price crash, from 19—passive investing started to become popular in the 1980s when, you know, Bogle founded Vanguard in the late 70s. And then during the bull market of the 80s, passive investing became popular. And, you know, it became totally dominant when the bull market went to insanely high levels in the 90s. And now with the stock crash, people are starting to question it. You know, maybe it's not such a great idea to put all your money in a risky asset class at the time when it is the riskiest it's ever been in history. People are starting to question the idea. And of course, I've been questioning it. Well, in my personal life, I began to question it in the mid-90s when I did research on my retire early plan and discovered that there was a lot of research showing that passive investing can never work. And then I began questioning it publicly in 2002 when I put that famous post to the Motley Fool board pointing out that the old school safe withdrawal rate studies get the numbers wrong, that those studies are analytically invalid and are going to cause millions of busted retirements in the event that stocks perform in the future anything at all as they've always performed in the past. But these ideas, like the old folk songs, you know, Bogle is known as Mr. Passive Investing today. And Bernstein supports passive investing as well. But they didn't come up with this idea of ignoring price. That's not Bogle's idea or Bernstein's idea. That idea has been around since the beginning of time. Since the first stock market was founded on planet Earth. Passive investing has been with us always and will be with us always. Passive investing is emotional investing. That's all. Passive investing says ignore common sense, ignore the entire record of stock market history. Go with your worst emotional instincts. Go with your get rich quick scheme. We all have a get rich quick urge within us. Just go with it, man. It'll be all right. Put all your retirement money on it. Go. Daddy needs a new pair of shoes. Roll those dice. Feeling lucky? Go with passive investing if you're feeling lucky. Now, it's obviously not presented that way by its advocates. The advocates say, oh, we have studies. It's scientific proof and it will work. And here's a chart with numbers, you know. Experts, 9 out of 10 experts endorse passive investing. You know, of course, what would you think they would say? What would you think they would say? And rational investing, which is the alternative, has also been with us since the beginning of time. The idea that stocks are dangerous when they're insanely overpriced is not an idea that Rob Bennett cooked up. You know, I don't know who cooked it up. Adam, probably. You know, back in the Garden of Paradise. Well, when they got thrown out. I guess in the Garden of Paradise, they didn't need to invest. But after they got thrown out, somebody probably started. Who was it? Cain? It was probably Cain, you know. Cain slew Abel, and after he slew Abel, he started the first stock market, you know, and started trading shares. And Adam, you know. Adam said, "Well, I need to have a lot of children, you know, to get this thing off the ground. So I'm going to need to have a little money put aside, you know, for my children." And he didn't want to invest. Cain was telling him invest passively; it'll work, you know, stocks for the long run. you can't time the market. Can't time the market. Kane was the first person who came up with that. And Adam, you know, he was saying, well, I don't know. You know, my common sense tells me that I should be rational. I think Kane was the first passive investor, and Adam was the first rational investor. And, you know, but the point is, this stuff goes back to the beginning of time. Rob Bennett didn't think this stuff up. And you know, all I do is, I believe that people should have access to accurate, honest, informed material on how stock investing works. And I started that Motley Fool, well, Grainy started it. He put the first post, but I built the community. I wanted it to be a big community where we'd have people with all sorts of different viewpoints contributing. So I built that community. And when Grainy started to attack us, I felt I needed to step in and do something to save the community. So that's how I got involved. And then what I had to do was I, of course, had to do research. I couldn't just say it's my opinion that, you know, I started out that way. I'd say it's my opinion that rational investing is better. I said this passive stuff just doesn't make any sense. But, you know, that only works for so long at some point. And truth be told, it was the goons who told us to look at the historical data. That was Grainy. Go back and check the post archives and you'll see. I was arguing that the reason why people should change their stock allocation when prices got insanely dangerous is just common sense. That's all I was arguing. And Grainy was the one saying, oh, but you've got to look at the historical data. The historical data says different. And I said, it can't say different. How could the historical data say that it makes sense to invest it, you know, all your money in stocks at insanely dangerous prices? I said, that doesn't make any sense. And so that's when John Walter Russell jumped in and looked at the data. And lo and behold, the data supported Adam. You know, the point here is it's all been going on for a long, long time, and it's sort of a pendulum. It's a pendulum that goes back and forth, and so, you know, the question you sort of have to ask is, if it really is just a pendulum, then what we'll have is we've had the moment. You know, passive investing has never been as popular as it was in the late 90s. Stocks, and the way we know that is because stocks were never as insanely priced as they were in the late 1990s. We've never seen price levels anywhere close to that. So that was the product of passive investing. That's as bad as it can ever get. What we saw from 95 through 2000, if you want some encouraging news, that's as bad as it can ever get. And you know, we should expect the price drop we had in the 30s was 80%, and we should be expecting at least that this time, because the price was so much more out of control this time, and we haven't seen 80% yet. We've seen 60% going back to January of 2000 to today. So, you know, we, in all likelihood, we still have another big price drop ahead of us. It's not for sure, but it's likely. But what happens, of course, is, as I said, we're now questioning, is this such a great idea? You know, investing all your money on a gamble that it's going to be different this time. Is it such a hot idea? And, you know, if it crushes us all, say that we have an 80% loss in the end or 85% loss in the end, and we're all crushed, probably rational ideas will catch on. And that, of course, would be good. I'd be in favor of that, but of course I'm not in favor of the crush part. You know, I'd like the ideas to catch on. My goal, and this is what I feel, this is where my contribution comes in. So what I'm really trying to do is to clarify what I see as my contribution. My contribution isn't coming up with the ideas, because the ideas are just out there. They've been out there since the beginning of time. They're out there on the internet. You know, you can find links. All these smart people, Rob Arnott, Cliff Asness, Ed Easterling, Jeremy Grantham, John Hussman, John Walter Russell, John Malden, Andrew Smithers, Rob Arnott, John Bogle, Bill Bernstein, all these people are smarter than Rob Bennett and have, you know, I think more to offer in terms of pure investing insights. But what they don't have, there is something I think they don't have, and that's really what I want to think about and look into. What they don't have a journalist perspective. They don't tend to take a I feel that what a journalist should try to do is report both sides. And that they do not do. And I'm not sure any of them do that. Robert Shiller, I didn't mention among that list, the master of them all. Robert Shiller comes closest to reporting the whole story. See, what I don't feel any of these people do, certainly not Bogle, certainly not Bernstein, but most of those others, even, you know, Rob Arnott, maybe. Most of them, like somebody like Jeremy Grantham. Jeremy Grantham is wonderful. And a few podcasts back, I read from Jeremy Grantham's quarterly letter to shareholders in his fund. And I, you know, the title was, Jeremy Grantham Tells the Truth, Straight No Chaser, about stock investing. It was a wonderful, wonderful letter. He talked about how the efficient market theory has been discredited for many years now. Research showing that this approach cannot work dates back to 1981. And Jeremy Grantham said everything that needs to be said. But what I feel is lacking, and I don't really mean to criticize Jeremy, but I think it's a fair point, is that Jeremy will sort of make his point, but his focus is on the practical. His focus is what to do. And that's, you know, in fairness, that's what most investors want to hear. Most investors don't want to hear what I put forward, which is, you know, how did this happen? You know, why are we so messed up? Why do we destroy ourselves over and over again? Jeremy Grantham, he'll put a couple paragraphs on that, and then he switches over to, here's what you should do. And I sort of resist that. I put forward, the calculators tell people. My attitude is, if you want to know what to do, why listen to Rob Bennett? Why not just go to the calculators? The calculators tell you what the historical data says. You know, why not just go with that? Historical data's got a whole lot more credibility than Rob Bennett. Go with how stocks have always worked in the past. Why listen to me? People say to me, I just get this all the time. They'll send emails and they'll say, well, Rob, you know, I started reading your site and it sounds very interesting. It makes a lot of sense, but you know, I haven't read all the articles. You know, I you know, apologize if you give this, but there's a lot of stuff, you know, at your site, and I haven't had time to get through it all. But where do you tell us, you know, what stock allocation we should have at the various P10 levels? You know, can you just tell me that? And, you know, I'm always grateful when people write me, and I do write them back, but I think my answers are probably always a little frustrating because I say, well, you know, I say they say, Rob, what's your system? I say, I don't have a system. I don't have, you know, there is no one answer to that question. It depends on your life goals and your financial circumstances and your risk tolerance, and it depends on, you know, what's playing out in the world, and there's no guarantee that stocks are going to perform in the future as they have in the past. So here's what I suggest. I suggest you go to the calculator, go to the stock return predictor, go to the risk, the retirement risk evaluator, go to the scenario surfer, go to the investment strategy tester, and you know, plug in some different things and get some answers. And don't use that as your, you know, don't just go by that, but use that to sort of get your thinking going. And then after you've thought about it a little bit, do some research of your own on the internet and come to your own decision, and then make your investing decision. Because if you've come to the decision and you've thought it through, you'll have confidence in what you did. And that's what makes it work. Confidence. If somebody says to me, Rob, what's the secret of investing? The answer is confidence. Because the secret of successful investing is investing for the long term. And investing for the long term is impossible without confidence. Because the way it works is that the world is going to shake you up. And people are seeing this today. People are shaken up today. Shooken up. Shit, I don't know how to say it. People are shook. They're all shook up. But, you know, you gotta, you know, now the passive investors are facing a crisis. They're saying, do we hold now? Now that our strategy's been proven a failure, should we still hold? And of course, the answer's no. If your strategy's a failure, you start over. But ultimately, you do want a strategy where you can hold. You want a real strategy, a strategy that works. Then you want to hold. It ain't passive investing. But that doesn't mean the idea of sticking with a strategy is wrong. What passive investors had, they thought they had confidence. What they had was bravado, false confidence, surface confidence. What you want is deep confidence. And I can't give that to you. I can't say, oh, you should have a 60% stock allocation today. And, you know, and then you follow it. Oh, Rob. Oh, thank you, Guru. Thank you, Guru. I'm at 60 starting today because Rob said so. You know what I think if you do that? You're doomed. You're doomed. You go to a 60% stock allocation because Rob told you to do so, and you're doomed. So don't ever say I told you. Don't come back 5 years from now and say, Rob, I lost all my money. It didn't work. If you went to 60% because Rob told you to, Rob's telling you you're doomed. I'm thinking of doing a podcast called the Seven Deadly Investing Sins and, you know, go through all the seven, you know, the seven deadly sins and how they relate to investing. And one of the seven deadly sins is sloth. And if you go with the stock allocation because that's what Rob told you, that's sloth. And of course, if you do it because John Bogle told you, that's sloth too. So I won't say you deserve to fail. You know, I think some would. Some would go so far they'd say you deserve to fail if you do that. I don't think anybody deserves to fail. I think we're all human. We're all sinners. We're all weak. And we all get... I'm not a big fan of justice, you know? Because justice scares me. If you know, I'm a Catholic and we believe in a just and merciful God. And the merciful God, he's my guy. Because the just God is the just God, no, he's got a file on me, and I'm in trouble. But the merciful God, I have a chance of sneaking by, I think, you know. My plan is, I wish I weren't so tall, but my plan is sort of to, you know, try to sneak past the guards, you know. I might get close enough to the gate where I can sort of sneak past the guards and, like Frodo, you know, maybe put on that ring and be invisible and just sneak right on by, you know. That's my thought. But I'm not real big on justice because, I mean, justice has its place. Justice has its place. Justice does. And you see, well, maybe I should go off on that riff, but let me go off on that riff in a second. But what I was going to say is, you know, I don't say, oh, you deserve what you get. My experience in life is, justice is God's justice, and you know I say God. You don't have to believe in the God I believe in. I'm just, you know, whatever God you know you believe in. But let's just say God is the spirit of the universe or whatever you want to say. God's justice is often delayed and often excessively harsh when it comes. This is my experience in life, that you know. People get all, like, let's just pick on Bernie Madoff. I've defended Bernie Madoff lots of times. Not defended him, but what I've said is that it doesn't help to hang him from a tree. That our anger is misplaced. Bernie Madoff may well have done bad things. There's a lot of evidence he did. And if he did, he should be prosecuted. I'm all for it. But I think it's misplaced anger when we get all angry at Bernie Madoff. I think we should be angry at ourselves. We should be looking within and say, what did we do wrong? Because we can't change Bernie Madoff. We can change ourselves. So put our energies where they can do some good. What did we do wrong? How did we contribute to this mess? That was the last podcast. It's all Schroeder's fault. Listen to that one if you want to hear that riff. But, you know, just say you're Bernie Madoff, just for sake of discussion. And you might say justice was delayed for many years. Bernie Madoff, you know, had whatever his scheme was and got away with it for years. Well, how do you think Bernie Madoff feels today? Now, some say, oh, he's just going to get a slap on the wrist, blah, blah, blah. Maybe. But I'm not so sure. I don't think he feels real great today. And Bernie Madoff, I don't know anything about the guy, but if he's smart enough to do what he did, he was smart enough to make a lot of money without cheating. So he could have had a great life. And I really have a hard time buying the idea that Bernie Madoff is glad about how things have turned out. I have a hard time swallowing that. I think he's on the hot seat. He's got a lot of people mad at him, his friends, his wife, you know, his family, the shame of it. So this is how I think things play out in life over and over and over again, that people do wrong things and they pay no price. Justice, you know, doesn't apply. And then it comes down like a hammer. And that's sort of the stock crash, you know. People have been investing recklessly, passively, from 1995 up until 1995. Rational investors and passive investors were on the same path. Stocks offered a strong value proposition from 1975 through 1995. So the rationals and the passives were together. They were soul brothers. And then in 1995, prices went to insanely dangerous levels, and rational investors cut back. And passives just charged right ahead. They said, hey, no need to be rational. We'll invest in this crazy, insanely dangerous stock market. And they, you know, where was the justice? No justice. No justice for 5 years. And then from 2000, 2008, there was sort of a little bit of justice. They weren't getting positive returns anymore, but they weren't losing either. They were just sort of treading water. And then 2008, the hammer comes down. But that's the way it works. That's the way this world works. I just see that all the time. You know, I always like to give these examples from marriages and from relationships. Well, you know, a guy mistreats his wife, you know, for years. And you see it. You know, and she's a good person. She tries to make it work. She tries and she tries. You know, and he's rude, or he ignores her, or he's, you know, whatever it happens to be. And then one day she leaves him. You know, and the guy is destroyed. You know, and it makes you sad. You say, you know, the guy deserves something. He sure deserves something. You know, we've all got a desire for justice inside. And we've all got a desire for mercy. And what seems to happen in the world is that justice is long delayed many times, and then it comes down like a hammer. So, you know, that's, I don't know how I got off on that riff, but that's my thought on that one. And but that applies in stock investing. So the mistake people make is that, you know, the market is God. The market is merciful. For many years, the market will let passive investors get away with murder for years. But it comes down like a hammer when it comes down. What my contribution is, it's not so much the investing ideas, I don't think. You know, what I've tried to do, what you know, as I say, if you're gonna come to me for investing advice, I mean, I'm happy, I'll discuss issues. I love to discuss issues. But if you're just gonna ask me what to do, you know, what I always do is sort of, I'll set the background up. I'll say these are the things to look at. But I'm uneasy about saying what to do, because unless you think it through yourself, it's not gonna work for you. And so the reason I don't give investing tips is because I don't think investing tips work. So I can't give them in good conscience. And, you know, so I say use the calculator. That's why I worked with John Russell to create the calculators, because I said that way people have a way to get the answers they want. You know, Rob Bennett is there with the articles and the podcast and the discussion board post to make the case for why you need to look at the calculators. But the calculators are the real thing. That's the historical data. That's what you should be looking at. And not one time. These aren't calculators you can run one time and they're going to give you the answers. You need to run them over and over and over again. You know, it wouldn't be a bad idea to run them every day. Some people are going to say, oh, I'm not going to do that. Well, you can do what you please, but investing is not something you learn about by listening to one podcast or reading one article. It's something that grows on you. And I go to those calculators. I don't use them quite every day, but I go back every few weeks. And every time I use the Scenario Surfer, I learn something new. I don't think there's been an exception yet. Every time I do a run on the Scenario Surfer, I learn something new. So, you know, that's the way you have to do it. And the reason, why is it I learned something new? It's because I was learning things in the interim. You know, if I didn't go on it for 2 weeks, in those 2 weeks, I was reading articles and I was processing information. I was, you know, recording podcasts. And so I know new things. And because I know new things, when I use the calculator, it causes me, I think I see it differently. I have, you know, my X-ray vision is more advanced. That's how learning works. So what I really want to say is, you know, I don't know if I said it as a joke earlier when I said take a bow, John Bogle, but I'm quite sincere about it. And I say this all the time. John Bogle is the one who taught me rational investing. And now I'm trying to turn the tables and saying, I want to teach him. And that's the way it works in this world. In every other field of human endeavor, none of us are born knowing it all. I have the title of chapter 10 of the book I'm working on is Jack Bogle started out as a little boy. John Bogle is just a little boy who grew up. And during the course of growing up, you know, he explored investing and he went to work for a mutual fund company and all this sort of thing. And he learned things. And some of the things he learned were wonderful and some of the things were horrible. And, you know, well, that's the way it works in this world of ours. You know, we all get born at a certain time, and he was born at a time where the dangers of passive investing were, you know, just waiting for somebody like John Bogle to come along and drag him in. And my view is, you see, this is my contribution. My contribution, I think, the thing that I add to the mix that wasn't there before, isn't really the material. I mean, the calculators, you might say yes, you might say no. I don't know. The concept of the calculators, I'd say yes. But of course, the research that drives them, that's John Walter Russell's work. I think he should get more credit. But the part that I added was this hobbit role, this dum-de-dum-dum. You know, I'm walking along and I just ask, you know, the way I always say it is I ask lots of annoying questions. That's what I've added to the mix, that a lot of people can't do that. For whatever reasons, you know, my wife will tell you, you know, she'll say, I don't know. Say we're going, you know, we're going somewhere, you know, planning an outing, and I'll just ask all these questions. You know, who's going to be there, and what time are we going to eat, and you know, and she'll say, you know, stop asking all these questions. You're driving me nuts, you know. And I say, well, I just wanted to know what I should wear, and you know, what the boys should bring, and you know, all these things. That's my reporter personality. I'm just a question asker. You know, that's what I am. And I don't get the feeling that John Bogle is a question asker. And I don't get the feeling that Bill Bernstein's a question asker. And that's where they miss the boat. And the problem that's developed in investor world is somehow the idea caught on that you don't need to be a question asker to be a successful investing quote-unquote expert. And you do. But you don't need to be, you know, it's not like, you know, there was a guy at, I have my favorite article at the site is the one that the band at Motley Fool section that is titled, Investing Discussion Boards, Ban Honest Posting on Valuations. And there's a guy there, I think it was Jim, and he says, oh, some of Rob's ideas are okay, but he makes it sound like the whole system is wrong, and only he knows. And that's not right. And I always like that comment because it sounds so sensible. It's just middle class, good sense. And yet, you know, and yet it's not totally off base. It's sort of true that I say that. But what I really, I don't say that, you know, when I say I'm the only one that knows, I don't say I'm the only one who knows intellectually. John Bogle understands intellectually that valuations affect long-term returns, and Bill Bernstein understands that. That's why I say in this podcast, it's not William Bernstein versus Rob Bennett, it's William Bernstein versus William Bernstein. That's what it's all about. William Bernstein understands rational investing. Read chapter 2 of his book, The Four Pillars of Investing. That's the best summary of rational investing I've ever read. So, you know, when John Russell says, I've given better advice than William Bernstein, it's true, but how can I say it? What's really going on is that I take William Bernstein's advice, which is, you know, 60% rational and 40% passive, and I just subtract the passive part. And when you subtract the passive part, you've got gold. So I didn't, should I take credit for that? In a sense, yes. If you follow the advice, you're going to be a lot better off. You're going to be able to retire many, many years sooner than if you follow William Bernstein's advice, which has all that passive investing trash mixed in. But Rob Bennett wouldn't have any advice to offer if it wasn't for William Bernstein. William Bernstein's the one who I got it from. And John Bogle's the one I got it from. And John Russell's the one I got it from. So, you know, I just have to describe it the way it is. I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to say, oh, I'm smarter than John Bogle. I'm smarter than, in a way, yes, in a way, no. I'm smarter in the sense that the end product is far superior. Rational investing beats passive investing, hands down. But I don't have a higher IQ than John Bogle or Bill Bernstein. What I have is some sort of quality that tells me if part of your investing advice is totally wrong, you need to subtract it. You can't ignore it. I think it's my reporter instinct. More than anything else, but there's more than one thing going on. I think it's partly a personality trait. I think a big part of it is that I look at these things from more of an emotional perspective. And so when I look at the failings of passive investing, I think what Bill Bernstein does is he brushes it off. He knows, you know, on some level of consciousness. He doesn't know it well enough to say it or to articulate it. But he knows, you can tell from his writings, that he knows there's problems. But I think he brushes it off. He says, oh, it can't be that bad. It can't be that bad. I mean, John Bogle supports it. John Bogle's brilliant. How bad could it be? And Rob Bennett doesn't do that. Rob Bennett says, well, I don't know how bad it can be, but let me find out and get back to you, you know? And then I say, is there anybody in this community that could maybe do some statistical research? Because me and Bill have been talking about how bad it is, and Bill thinks it's not that bad, but I don't know. I'm thinking maybe it's not that bad. Maybe Bill's right. Maybe it is bad. I who knows? Until we look. And I've got some questions. And then, you know, I was fortunate enough to run into John Walter Russell, who was gracious enough to spend 7 years of his life answering our questions. And, you know, the end result is I find out, oh, it's really bad. It's really, 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 really bad. So we better X out all that passive investing gibberish. And let's just take what Bill Bernstein says and report it without the passive investing gibberish and see how that works. And then we test that, and that's a winner. And that's a winner. So, you know, the way I see it is that Bill Bernstein and John Bogle, they wrote some songs. And, you know, they were interesting songs, interesting things to say. But maybe they didn't have enough jokes in them, you know. So I sort of redid them a little bit, you know, and jazzed them up a little bit, put in some jokes. And now the song really works, you know. The song that they had, you know, sort of sounded good for a couple years there. But it didn't really have lasting appeal. And the song I have has lasting appeal, but I don't want to take credit for the song. I want to take credit for compiling the song, you know, for knowing to put the jokes in and for knowing to, you know, to mix up the different elements properly, to mix Robert Shiller with John Bogle. You know, Bernstein didn't do that. And I will take credit for that. I'm not shy about it. I'm not shy about contributions I've genuinely made. I'm not an excessively modest person. But I don't want to say that I came up with Schiller's ideas or I came up with Bernstein's ideas. I didn't. You know, Bernstein came up with Bernstein's ideas and Bogle came up with Bogle's ideas and Schiller came up with Schiller's ideas and Rob Bennett mixed them in the right proportions so that we had a winner. And, you know, there's a sense in which we don't have a winner today. That has to be noted. And that sense is, you know, how many people are following? How many people are following valuation-informed indexing today? Now, this is the point the goons will make. You go to the Goon Central Board and they'll say, oh, ha, 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 Rob, you know, nobody's following. Well, you know, they spent 7 years destroying every website that talks about the ideas or every discussion board that talks about the ideas. And now they laugh that no one's following it. Well, you know, I pointed out in that last podcast, John Graney has lost probably $1 million because of his belief in passive investing. So, you know, this is another case of justice, you know, being delayed and then hitting hard. But he could be $1 million richer today. You know, if our community, if he had honored his promise to our community to follow our community norms in his posting behavior. And, but until we overcome the goons and the, you know, the goonishness is within us all, until we overcome our own goonishness, when we overcome our own goonishness, the goons aren't a problem, you know, we can remove the goons. If Graney agrees to honor our norms, we obviously are happy to have his input. If he refuses and he continues to destroy our boards, we obviously can remove him, right? Nothing's stopping us. But the thing stopping us is our own goonishness. The thing stopping John Bogle is his own goonishness. John Bogle is a goon. He's not a goon in the sense that Graney is or Lindauer is. But there is a part of John Bogle's mind that is drawn to get-rich-quick schemes. There is a part of Bill Bernstein's mind that is drawn to get-rich-quick schemes. Just as there's a part of my mind that is drawn to get-rich-quick schemes, and just as there is a part of your mind that is drawn to get-rich-quick schemes. And that's where I put my energies. That's what I want to overcome, because when I overcome that, then you know, the phrase I use is it's smooth sledding from that point. Because then, you know, we don't have a small group. Let's say that rational investors are today 10% of the population. You can go on the Bogleheads board and you'll see there are hundreds of people there that understand that valuations affect long-term returns. So let's say that's 10% of the board community. And let's say it's 10% of the investing population and 10% of the experts that advocate rational investing. 10%, you know, it's better than 0%, but a lot of people, the way humans work is humans listen to the 90%. So we've got an economic crisis. That 10%, you know, Robert Shiller has offered wonderful investing advice and all the rest. You know, Rob Arnott, Cliff Asness, you know the list. Well, you know, is that going to keep us from heading into a depression? Is that going to save our economy? that these people were right and the passive investing advocates were wrong? It's not. If 90% believe in passive investing, the economy crashes. So I will consider myself a true success when 90% believe in rational investing, when people laugh at the idea that you don't need to adjust your stock allocation when prices go to insanely dangerous levels. That's my vision. My vision is a world where people understand that, you know, how absurd, how preposterous, how dangerous, how reckless passive investing really is. And that we don't have today. So it's not a complete success. And so the question I always struggle with is, you know, what words can I put forward that will persuade people to that? You know, I just had there was a post just this morning at Goon Central, and Grainy put up some sort of insulting, you know, abusive post. And I came back and I said, John, you know, I have a question. I said, would you be willing to tell us how much you lost in the stock crash? Because I brought that up on yesterday's podcast, and I've been thinking about it. You know, he's lost, my guess is it's between $500,000 and $1 million. I don't know the number. But I'd like to think if he's lost $500,000 or $1 million, that might make him stop in his tracks for a minute and think, wait a minute, maybe this campaign of terror isn't such a hot idea. Maybe abusive posting isn't the answer. Maybe I should think about what the historical data says. You know, maybe Rob's right. Maybe lots of people are right. Maybe Shiller's right. All these other people. Maybe Bogle's right. Maybe Bernstein's right. You know, maybe he won't do that. Obviously, the track record tells you he's not going to do it. But it's a reality that he lost the money. It certainly would make sense that he would not want to lose more. And I think it, you see, I think it makes sense that Bogle would not want to lose more and that Bogle would want to give better investing advice. That's what I believe. And I, you know, to me, how could that be controversial? It's so obvious. It's so painfully obvious. And that is my contribution. It's not a finished work, but my contribution is I want to bring Investo World together. My vision is to bring us to a place where, you know, there aren't any bear boards or bull boards, and there aren't passive investing boards and rational investing boards. There are just investing boards, and we're all working to learn. And so the bulls learn from the bears, and the bears learn from the bulls, and the passives learn from the rationals, and the rationals learn from the passives. And John Bogle learns from Rob Bennett, and Rob Bennett learns from John Bogle. And Bill Bernstein learns from Bill Bernstein. Because, you see, Bill Bernstein knows, just as John Grainy knows, and just as you know, each and every one of us knows that get-rich-quick schemes don't work in the long run. We all know it. This is why our discussions have been so contentious. Because we know it, and we're not willing to admit that we know it. We know it, and we're not willing to admit we know it. So we know what works. We all knew. You know, long before Rob Bennett came on the scene, we all knew. So when John Walter Russell says Rob Bennett's investing ideas are better than John Bogle's, all he's saying really is John Bogle's ideas are better than John Bogle's. The rational side of John Bogle is better advice than the passive side of John Bogle. The rational side of Bill Bernstein is better than the passive side of Bill Bernstein. And the rational side of John Grainy is better than the passive side of John Grainy. And the rational side of Mel Lindauer is better than the passive side of Mel Lindauer. So I think my contribution, you know, what earns me a place at the table is what I've done from the first day. You know, what makes me such a, you know, pain in the backside is I hold up a mirror to these people. John Grainy is the one who used to advocate looking at the historical data. That wasn't Rob Bennett's idea. That was John Grainy's idea. This is all in the Post archives. Rob Bennett wasn't the one who said, oh, we should look at the safe withdrawal rate. That was John Graney's idea. And I just said, yes, I agree, John. We should look at the safe withdrawal rate. I agree we should look at the historical data. What do you think would happen if we used an analytically valid methodology to look at the historical data? See, that's what made me such a pain in the neck. That I said, yes, let's look at the historical data, but let's use an analytically valid methodology. Then what? And then, of course, you get very, very different answers. And the reaction, some people, of course, were very interested, but you know, the so-called big shots didn't like the idea at all, that they were wrong, you know, that all this sort of thing. But the reaction has been, and the community as a whole tolerated that. You know, the community as a whole did not favor the ban on honest posting, but the community as a whole certainly tolerated it. They permitted it, and they permit it to this day. My vision is a community that will not tolerate it. A community that will say, no, we have certain norms. We have behavior that we expect from people who are permitted to post here. You know, we believe in free speech. You know, let's take it outside of just the retire early community and the indexing community and talk about the community of the United States. We believe in something called free speech, do we not? Well, why not allow free speech on the internet, on investing discussion boards? Why not allow people to discuss what the historical data says? Why not? It works in, you know, baseball. We allow discussion of different baseball strategies. It works in, what other kinds of boards there are. Politics, we allow free speech. Why not allow it in investing? That's Rob Bennett's contribution. In other words, my contribution is more of a process contribution. It's not the investing tips, because the investing tips, really, I just picked them up from people like Bernstein and Bogle and Schiller and whoever else is out there. You know, I'll steal from the best. I'll steal from anywhere I can. But what Rob Bennett does is, Rob Bennett says, I don't want to hear just one side of the story. I want to hear both sides, because I believe, as a journalist, I believe that when we allow both sides, we develop a richer, deeper, more confident understanding of the realities. So I think John is right. I think John Walter Russell's right that the investing advice offered at PassionSaving.com and at John's site is superior in every way to the advice offered by John Bogle or Bill Bernstein. It allows you to invest to get higher returns with far less risk. Far higher returns with far less risk. But I never want to get into a position where I say, Rob Bennett is the king, you know. Listen to Rob Bennett. Ignore John Bogle. Ignore Bill Bernstein. Because when you listen to Rob Bennett, you're listening to John Bogle and Bill Bernstein. The influence is too deep. You're listening to the better side of John Bogle and the better side of Bill Bernstein and the better side of John Graney and the better side of Mel Lindauer. You're listening to their better side. You're listening to their rational side, their compassionate side, their loving side, instead of that dark, hateful, selfish, frightened side. It's the angry, hateful, selfish, dark, frightened side of our personalities that causes passive investing. That's where it comes from. That's where get-rich-quick schemes come from. And that's all that passive investing is. Depending on how you define it. You know, some people define passive investing as the ideas of John Bogle. Well, that's not true in that case, because 60% of what Bogle says is gold. But when I say passive investing is the dark side, I'm talking about the idea that you don't need to change your stock allocation when prices go to insanely dangerous levels. That's the thing you're passive about, your stock allocation. That's the get-rich-quick scheme. That's the ugly side. And what I'm trying to do is, my contribution is to focus in on that like a laser and say, let's cut out the cancer. Let's cut out the ugliness. And then let's all celebrate what's left. And what is left is lots of wonderful investing ideas put forward by John Bogle and Bill Bernstein and Robert Shiller and John Walter Russell and hundreds of others. Let's celebrate all that good stuff. But in order to get there, we've got to cut out that cancer, which is this sick idea that there's some alternate universe where you don't need to change your stock allocation in response to big price changes. So that's my take on John's words. I hope that puts it in a different perspective. But as I say, I think John is right. He's not wrong in what he's saying. But I like to have the perspective at it. I like to have the caveat at it because I think it's a question a lot of people are confused about. They think, how did Rob Bennett get so smart that he, you know, his advice is so much better than these people who have studied investing for so much longer? And that's how I think that happened. You know, I stole from them, you know. I just stole from them. And what I did was I corrected the errors. They have a hard time correcting their errors. And I just said, I'm going to correct the errors and see what happens. And I started walking down this path that just gets better and better and better and better. You correct the errors and it just opens up. A million insights open up to you. So I look forward to the day when we're all together, when it's not different boards or not enemy camps. We're all together. And we're all sharing together, and we're not worried so much about who came up with these ideas. You know, do they have John Bogle's name on them? Do they have Rob Bennett's name on them? I don't see that that's what matters. What matters is, do the ideas work? And there's plenty of credit to go around. John Bogle can have all the credit in the world, and there's plenty of credit for Rob Bennett and John Walter Russell and anybody else who wants to get involved. You know, Petey Person and Wanderer and Fool Me Once and radiology doctor and microlepsis and John D. Craig, you know, and Taylor Larimore and on and on and on and on and on. That's the future of investing, in my humble opinion. A Hobbit Reporter. This Hobbit Reporter would love to hear your thoughts. Please go to the Contact Rob button at the left side of every page at the website. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care.